It's child stars and lemur parties this week on Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. I'm the Ben of that.
And I'm the Leslie. This is a weekly podcast about the Netflix original comedy series BoJack Horseman.
And Leslie, my friend, what episode are we talking about today?
Today we are going to go into the third episode of season one, Prickly Muffin.
Yes, indeed. BoJack Horseman is reunited with Sarah Lynn, the youngest cast member on his former sitcom. Sarah has grown up twice and become a sexually awakened pop star, what a gross sentence, and now a washed-up has-been. Sarah has a violent breakdown in a furniture store, stabbing herself when her boyfriend Andrew Garfield, yes, the Spider-Man, breaks up with her. BoJack attempts to check her into rehab, but that doesn't last. Sarah Lynn guilts her way into BoJack's heart and house by playing up their past relationship. After a seemingly endless party at BoJack's, the sitcom star finally breaks and tries to suggest she goes to rehab again. Sarah Lynn storms out of the house saying that none of this was truly her fault and she can live responsibility free. Meanwhile, Princess Carolyn is trying to be one of the cool kids long enough to get herself a brand new client, and Diane Nguyen is just trying to get this book started.
So let's talk about this. Let's have a discussion about what might be one of the grosser episodes, at least of season one, of BoJack Horseman. Just right out the gate, too, because we're only on episode three at this point.
Yeah, why not? I've already had to use the phrase sexually awakened today, so we might as well just get into this.
I think that the first thing that we should probably talk about is the intro to the episode and how brilliantly it did play with the introduction of Sarah Lynn, having Sextine Awkwafina talk about how Sarah Lynn should probably go where you go, where you might as well just go and die and nobody wants you. And then the next thing that we get is a ring at BoJack's doorbell. And he's like, oh, who could that be?
This is literally one of my favorite gags in the entire series.
Yeah.
Not in this episode, not in this season, in the entire series.
It's really good.
There is an opening to this episode in which we are shown Sarah Lynn's kind of acting debut on Of Horses, or excuse me, that's the name of our show, on Horsing Around with BoJack Horseman. And then it cuts ahead 12 years to her kind of Hannah Montana, or well, I should say Miley Cyrus reimagined, whatever, pop career. And then it cuts ahead to her just being 30 and sad. During that, a Ryan Seacrest type, as the show labels him, interviews Sextine Awkwafina, asking her questions about Sarah Lynn. She drops the phrase, she should go where nobody cares about you and it doesn't matter whether you live or die. And then it cuts to BoJack's house, the doorbell rings, and we get a overly enthusiastic, well, who could that be? And this joke is wonderful because they managed to cash that exact punchline in twice, because literally not 3 minutes later in the episode, they do a similar gag where he says, I doubt we'll ever see her again. Ding dong. Well, who could that be?
And it's the same moment. You laugh really, really hard both times at the exact same moment shown to you twice with two different lenses. And it's so brilliant for an episode that is on its face just kind of icky. It has so much promise. I'm not saying necessarily that it's a bad episode, but it is one that leaves you a little queasy. But yeah, the beginning is choice. Is one of my favorite moments as well, I would have to say.
Yeah, I just think that's so clever that... I mean, obviously, there's... Folks, there's a thing in comedy called a callback. It's when you reference a previous setup that you may have done earlier in your comedy special or episode. But this is kind of more of a final finale punch. And the audience laughs because they're clever enough to remember the initial setup. And the payoff is so much later. This is some comedy insider knowledge. It's rare, however, you get to play the exact scene twice and it's equally as funny both times under two different contexts. That's double clever.
Not to mention within like 3 minutes of each other as well. I mean, they were only, those two scenes were only about 3 minutes apart. So I just found that was quite good as well, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes. I completely agree.
Yeah. So that was one point that I definitely did not want to leave neglected because I know how much I loved that. And I knew how much
you loved
that as well.
My favorite joke in the entire series.
So beyond that, why don't we discuss what it is that makes this episode give you just kind of an icky feeling inside?
Oh, like me in particular, you mean?
Or, you know, anyone who has any sense of decency to them in their souls.
I mean, gee, where do we begin? All right, number one, sexy cartoons. Uncomfortable already. Maybe not for some people, definitely for me. The uncomfortable factor, not... Anyway, number two, BoJack, a presumably like 50-year-old.
Yeah, I think he's supposed to be in his early 50s. Because if she's 30, in 2014.
Well, forget specific years. If she goes from 6 to 30, then he's got to go from like 25 to 50.
Sure.
Like, I mean, how young are you when you get your own sitcom?
Well, it was his first one, remember. But still, I mean, I do think that there is evidence, as we watch later on, I do think that there is, like, some actual timeline confirmation that he was X years old. He is, like, I want to say 52 for some reason. I really want to say he's, like, roughly 52 years old.
Yeah, no, that I mean, that makes total sense. My argument is just that, like, if 26 or 24 years of... My argument is just that if 24 years have passed for her, they've also passed for him.
Yep.
And like, I don't know, he can't be more than, too much more than, oh God, I guess my age, you know, when he got his first show. So he has to be at least 50.
Yeah. So he's old. So he's real old is what we're getting at, is BoJack is a middle-aged man.
Yeah.
Horse.
Anyway, the uncomfortable, well, he's more horse than a man.
Or is he more man than a horse?
Yeah, no, obviously what's uncomfortable about this episode is a 50-something-year-old man boning down with the actress who played his daughter 25 years ago.
His very small daughter. Oh, well, not to mention, not only is it gross on its face just because of who he portrayed on screen, but because throughout the episode, before they start having sex, there is a direct parallel of him trying to fix her and make her okay as a parental figure would. And Diane even points this out to him at one point, and he denies it. And then he immediately is like, is somebody hurting my baby? So there's a lot going on just between BoJack and Sarah Lynn as well. So it's gross.
An interesting thing that this show does, and I'm not sure if I actually like it or not, where characters literally announce their psychological problems and play them off as jokes. And I mean, quite literally, like BoJack says, like, what, do you think I'm just trying to recover from the fact that, you know, yada, yada, yada. And he like lists out like the complex, like, you know, parental issues he's going through. And then like, he literally just kind of ends that off with, yeah, right. Or whatever, however the actual line goes. I certainly didn't write that down or have that memorized.
And then he immediately afterward gets news that something, like, he hears a crash, I think.
Yeah, it's like glass breaking.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, is something happening to my baby? I think that's actually when he finds them knocking down the wall.
Yeah, drilling holes through his sad horse painting.
Which we'll get to later. Much, much, much later. That's what we call a callback. So it's just, it's a weird episode that has, it's got a lot of complexities to it that, like you said, some of it could be seen as bad writing, but I don't think it is either.
I'm not sure where I weigh down on that. Because, like, if it were in any other show, I'd be like, well, that's on the nose. But in this show, which is literally, I mean, in some ways, a parody of drama.
Sure. It's a parody of a lot of different genres.
Like, that's almost like Airplane-level telegraphing.
It is. And I think that the reason why it works is that we have already been blatantly shown a few tropes in this episode. First of all, there was the, who could that be joke? Not once, but twice. So we already have that tone. We also already have the context of the relationship between Sarah Lynn and BoJack, which is complex enough and kind of weird and gross. But it hasn't really gotten to the gross part yet. But when he says this.
Yeah.
However, I think that he talks about all this stuff with Diane. And just hits the nail on the head as to what it is while denying it overtly. I think that he does all of that directly after she goes on her... where she goes on her exposition as to her thoughts on Sarah Lynn right before saying, oh, but you know, I don't think about her that much. So I think that that was sort of a subversion of... I think that it was kind of a subversion of... Like you said, how did you describe it? You said it was like, oh, airplane level.
Airplane level telegraphing.
That's right.
Referring, of course, to the like 1980s Leslie Nielsen parody film.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it's just like, it's absurdist. Like, it's absurd to literally just announce your psychological problems out loud like that to the audience. I don't think they do that in Airplane. I just feel like that's kind of a...
No. I see what you mean. It's very ham-fisted. I guess would be a good word for it. But I think that it works just because of the use and the subversion of a couple of different tropes already in the episode, such as the father figure, daughter, daddy-daughter dynamic that just goes really wrong at the end, and all of that kind of stuff, which I guess we're talking about a lot of stuff because I don't think that we want to discuss that part of the episode, but it's part of the episode, so...
Yeah, I appreciate you using the word daddy in this one.
You know, you set him up with sexual awakening, and I knock him down with daddy. That's what we do here.
No, but like, I think one of the reasons they kind of keep doing that running gag of announcing the psychological problems or whatever, is like these characters are just skirting around self-awareness at points.
Well, especially at the beginning of the series.
Well, I mean, yes, but I think throughout, like some of these people are just getting like right on the edge, close but no potato, to figuring out what's actually wrong with them. But then it's subverted and played for laughs, like oh, what do you think I'm supposed to be unwinding my parental trauma or whatever?
Right.
It's played off as a joke.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a joke so that they can telegraph this key information to the audience. But also it's a joke that like, no, you're that close to getting it correct.
Right.
Like you're that close to actually realizing what's wrong with you and solving your own problems.
Yeah.
As characters, in addition to conveying information to the listener.
And speaking of getting it almost right, that monologue at the end by Sarah Lynn, at the very end of the episode, where she basically lays out the entire plot of the series of BoJack Horseman in one monologue, where she discusses how it's pretty much... So he wants her to go to rehab. He does one last half-assed attempt to try and get her to fix her life, to sort her life out.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, well, it's pretty much too late for me. I'm just going to go and I'm going to surround myself with sycophants and find people to stay with who will let me party and just do a bunch of drugs and numb myself until I die. And then she just cheeringly leaves. And clearly that is definitely what BoJack has been doing, maybe not to the obvious extent that Sarah Lynn has, because he hasn't had just a ton of insanely crazy parties at his house or whatever, but he...
Well, not in this current decade of his life.
No.
I believe it's implied he certainly did it in his 40s and 30s.
Very true. That's a very good point. I guess that you settle down a little bit when you're in middle age.
Hmm. Well, you're supposed to.
Well, you're meant to, anyway. So, yeah, but he definitely does surround himself with people who will lift up his ego, as artificial as that may be.
And it's mostly Princess Carolyn.
It is. Which is weird, because she really doesn't have, like, she does have a little bit of contempt for him, but she does continue to lift him up as his agent. Which, calling back to episode one, we saw a bit of that, like, right after they break up. He's like, you know, do I look old or something? And then she's like, do you want me to answer as your girlfriend or as your agent? Like, you can't, you know, she doesn't tell him the truth as his agent at all. She tells him whatever he wants to hear. Todd is kind of a hapless wanderer in his life right now, to the point where he's a yes man through sheer
proximity.
By sheer proximity. That's a good way to put it. Just because, not because he's trying to impress him or because he wants to have BoJack think of him a certain way, but just because, like, yeah, he's down for whatever. So, and I think, you know, that might be one of the reasons why he's still around on BoJack's couch, despite the fact that BoJack has had a guest room all of these years, as we discover in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that BoJack's closest friends are a homeless kid, his agent, and his most hated rival.
That's
and a person
true.
Who is legally working for him.
Yeah, and a person, yeah, who's required to hang out with him as part of her job.
So, I don't know, that kind of says something about the character.
Yeah, and I think that that's all reiterated in that monologue that Sarah Lynn tells BoJack when she's leaving the house.
So, you obviously have brought up, you know, the kind of crux of this episode, her lines at the end of this episode where she talks about how she doesn't actually need to be responsible for anything that happens in her life and it's too late to save her and this is just who she is now.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to tie that speech backwards.
Okay.
To Diane's criticism of culture.
Oh, right. Okay.
because right after Sarah Lynn gives that speech, BoJack kind of gets weirdly nihilistic for a moment and absolves himself of any sort of cultural guilt.
Yes,
you see where
true.
I'm going with this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Earlier in the episode, BoJack Horseman asks Diane Nguyen, hey, what do you think of Sarah Lynn? And while he means, hey, what do you think about her living here?
Sure.
Diane kind of launches off into maybe like a, maybe only a 60-second explanation of
culture, feminism.
A very nuanced feminist critique of, like, very nuanced. Like, very nuanced. Yeah. Like, she kind of, like, I don't want to say contradicts, but, like, she adds, like, three different layers on top of her initial statement.
I think that it is, well, because she, I think she's kind of thinking out loud, because she does kind of correct herself as she goes. I wouldn't say she contradicts herself. I think she corrects herself as she goes throughout her tiny little monologue about feminism, and specifically feminism in the public eye and the cult of celebrity and all of that stuff. And it all kind of gets wrapped up into this nice little 60-second long bow. And at the very end, yeah, BoJack does say, hey, Sarah, you know, Sarah Lynn is right. Like, it's, I'm not responsible for what I do because society has messed us up so much anyway. And I think that, yeah, I hadn't really considered that, but that's definitely a parallel that's worth exploring.
Yeah. So what Diane essentially says is, like, you know, I'm not going to say it verbatim, and I don't remember it verbatim either. But Diane essentially goes, like, yeah, I mean, obviously she's, like, you know, a sexually reawakened, you know, character, yada, yada, yada. But I think maybe that's something we just tell ourselves so that we can more comfortably cater to the male gaze and fit in with the society. But at the same time, it's more nuanced than that. But it kind of brings me, excuse me, but it kind of makes me think about the number of things that I have had, maybe not as nuanced takes about, but nuanced takes about, where I have decided intellectually or morally that I can't support something, or I shouldn't engage with a certain piece of art, or to kind of push back against a cultural movement of some kind, and tried to grapple that with the realization that whatever I do, it effectively will not matter, because that the choice of whether or not something succeeds or like a big business succeeds or fails is not down to my money.
Right.
Like, vote with your dollar is certainly a thing, but, like, it also kind of doesn't matter on an individual level. So if I, you know, I can make Jeff Bezos is, like, the world's richest dude on the planet, right?
Sure.
He is. Well, sure. He's up there. He's up there. Anyway, sure. He owns Amazon. And Amazon has some incredibly shady labor practices.
Huh.
I can, like, literally, like, you know, put in an enormous amount of effort into finding alternatives to Amazon and shopping around them and, you know, putting myself through waiting for, 20-day delivery or whatever, you know, yada, yada, yada. Like, I can make conscious efforts to avoid that. But, like, what the $70 I might spend there over the course of a year are a drop in the pond to the, like, literally hundreds of millions of other people who are using it. Or same with, like, you know, kind of, like, other disruptor, you know, stuff or whatever. Like, I can tell myself I won't use Lyft, but it doesn't ultimately matter. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Or I'm not going to go see this movie because it's blah, 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 whatever. But it still gets an Oscar nom and still, it's still going to get hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever.
Well, I mean, the Oscars are whatever they are, but
yeah,
right. So what you're saying basically is that it ultimately doesn't matter what you do as an individual. The world is going to continue to spin, and corporations are going to continue to make money, and things are going to continue to be corrupt or sacred or whatever it is that they are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the line of, you know, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Sure.
But where it applies to BoJack, it's more of like, oh, my participation in the culture doesn't matter.
Right. Because
it's all society and it doesn't matter and I'm not to blame for any of it.
Yeah, for
sure. So he literally just adopts, like, complete, you know, laissez-faire, like, it does not matter what I do nihilism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. And I know that it's Diane, right, who tries to tell him, no, that's not the moral of this story at all, and that's not what you should be taking away, which again is another beautiful, beautiful meta moment from the writers, as Diane might as well be talking to us, the audience, watching the episode that we just watched, and perhaps coming to the same conclusion that BoJack did, as evidenced by you, Ben, just going off on a tangent about Amazon and Jeff Bezos and Justice League and so on and so forth. I think that the message here is that the writers are trying to tell the audience that is not what you're supposed to get out of this at all. That is not the point. Do not take that from this.
Yeah. No, my examples might have been weird, but I just meant like, I just mean like culture is going to have its trends.
No. And
singular individuals really aren't going to be what makes or breaks it.
Sure.
And however,
but that doesn't mean that what you do doesn't matter.
Yes. However, BoJack uses that as an excuse to literally just stop caring completely.
Precisely.
Instead of actually try to influence anything.
Just found that it's not what you should do. The writers are saying this not.
Because this isn't even a large-scale cultural problem.
Right.
This is an interpersonal relationship that he's chalking up to
right.
large cultural trends.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, it's the old adage of, you know, I watched too much TV and didn't get enough hugs as a kid, and so now I'm going to be a rude jackass to everybody that I meet. Like, it's a false parallel to draw, I would say.
Yeah. Anyway, I really like that. And I also really like Diane's extremely nuanced take about these kind of characters.
Oh, yeah. That was... I loved that. I love that so much.
Because that's a conversation we have in... folks, my native medium is comics. But that's like a discussion we have in comic books a lot is in video game culture, I guess, too, is like, oh, no, this character is empowered by their sexiness or whatever. I'm like, okay, a dude still wrote that, though.
Yeah, that is a slippery, that is a...
Like, that always comes up when Power Girl gets mentioned with her weird boob window.
I saw a tweet about that earlier today where apparently the writer tried to justify her having a boob window when maybe...
My pal, we saw the same tweet. Yeah,
fair enough.
But she's like, yeah, I one of these days I figured I'd cover over this hole with a symbol, something that mattered, but
purpose,
I just don't have that. And she's like getting all teary-eyed while definitely pushing her tits up.
Yeah, that's the one. And it's like, girl,
it's scummy.
If you just want, or like, you know, dude, if you just want to draw boobs, just draw some boobs. It's fine. Like,
honestly, I don't think anyone cares that Power Girl looks like that. It's that they keep trying to justify it.
But it's the justification was so bad, it was funny.
There's no justification. She can just be a pinup character. It doesn't really matter.
It's okay.
DC has plenty of well-written, well-drawn women, too. Like, it's fine. It's ultimately fine. I couldn't help but make that connection today just because...
No, you're right, though. You're
absolutely
right.
It's the same kind of thing. Like,
it absolutely is.
Critiques of female characters, you know, sexuality, but knowing that at the same time, it might just be justification to allow them to fit in certain male-oriented slots.
Exactly.
This episode's getting heady.
It really is. It's a complex episode in that the themes are very complex, even though the storyline itself, the plot itself, is fairly straightforward. I'm trying to imagine or think of what the B plot even is of this episode.
The B plot, I don't think, really exists in the same way. It's certainly not Todd focused. It's Princess Carolyn focused.
Oh, I guess that is the B plot, even though she's actually... Because typically with a B plot, you kind of cut back and forth between scenarios. But with this B plot, she's there in the same space existing, interacting with, you know, with BoJack and with Sarah Lynn, while she's trying to get, presumably, Sarah Lynn to sign on to have her as an agent. Which, of course, you find out at the end of the episode, it was all a huge con. She's playing the long con to try and get Andrew Garfield instead. Because Princess Carolyn is super good at her job.
Yes. Yeah. It turns out she's a genius. Who knew?
I think you knew.
Yeah. She's my favorite. Two of my favorite... I know I just said that this episode contains my favorite gag of the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
But two of my favorite gags this episode are both Princess Carolyn related.
Mm-hmm.
It is the one where she kind of, it's like the last day of the party or whatever, where she kind of hovers over Sarah Lynn with, "I bet you noticed I'm ignoring you." And literally, you know, she tries to push a deal for like Croatian yogurt, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Onto Sarah Lynn. Sarah Lynn just says, "Go stand in the corner," and you just get an extremely chipper Amy Sedaris going, just, "Okay.
Okay."
Walking off.
She has some fantastic one-word lines in throughout the series. We'll get into some other ones later. I don't want to go into them right now, but she is very good at that.
I don't remember the exact line that is the second favorite gag of mine from this episode, but it is when they are drilling the sad horse painting to make room for the cocaine closet /sex room.
Right.
Or whatever that the designation for that closet is. She says something along the lines of, "Keep it cool, Kissinger."
Oh, yeah. I think it is that, actually. By. Yeah.
Which, for a character who is trying to hang out with, like, a bunch of drunk young adults and is trying to be one of the cool kids, to reference a extremely old politician, I think is, like, incredibly fitting for what Carolyn, like, doesn't...
Yes.
She just doesn't actually connect with them at all. And I think that gives it away that she references a politician from the 60s.
Yes, this was very, very how do you do, fellow kids. And it was executed very well. Yeah, so speaking of the cocaine closet, so there's the cocaine closet and the fact that the Prickly Muffin video at the beginning is part of it is shot and filmed and released in the planetarium. These are giving us incredibly subtle clues as to who Sarah Lynn is as a person in the first episode that we meet her. And I think that that's important to mention, just because I find it very impressive. As I do rewatches, now that I know everything that I know, picking up on these tiny, tiny little things, such as she loves the planetarium and she wants to be an architect, I think that these things were intentionally put in. And I think that I know that you and I have had debates about some of the other scenes and some of the other facets of characters' personalities. And I know that we have discussed the fact that sometimes they kind of writers retroactively go back and say, okay, well, we like that facet. Let's build on that. And it makes it so much richer when you rewatch. But I don't think that this is one of those instances. I do think that they included this stuff from the beginning, knowing all along, at least the architect stuff. I don't know about the planetarium, but that doesn't seem random to me.
Planetarium. I think the planetarium is incidental.
Okay.
I think, listeners, I know this is a spoiler cast, but in case you are maybe watching along with us, slight season 3 spoiler.
They're in the planetarium. She says she likes it. That's it. That's what you need to know.
Well, that's when you start getting into authorial intent and like whether or not this show that is ostensibly written over the course of probably 5 or 6 years now, whether these small touches are the artist specifically saying, and by artist I mean both visual artists and the written work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And by artist I mean both the visual artist and the written work. Mm-hmm. Whether these are things that they have intentionally said, let's go back and touch on this again to like complete the metaphor, or if it's stuff that was planned from the beginning.
Sure.
And typically with serialized work, you would think that it was stuff where they said, okay, let's go back and add to that, but you can literally never know.
Right. Unless
I've written entire stories where I've literally told nobody how it ends. Mm. So it's impossible, you know, it's impossible to tell.
Yeah.
Cause it might just be all in someone's head.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I also, in the past of consuming media, have been guilty of giving artists and writers far too much credit. That's all I'll say about that. But I will say that I don't think that it's giving them too little credit in your case, in this case, with this show specifically, to acknowledge that they do go back and pull things from the past in order to give them more context in the future and to give it all a huge sense of continuity. In fact, I think that attention I think that it's better than just having a one-off. However, the reason why I think that the planetarium is not incidental is that it's really random. Like, why a planetarium of all places. Like, it just says the, like, they're in the lobby of the planetarium. You know, I mean, like, I guess it would be one thing because obviously she shoots off in a rocket at one point. It'd be one thing if they were, like, in the room where all the planets were and all that stuff. But, like, she's just in the lobby of the fucking planetarium with the word planetarium.
Yeah. And, in fact, it really only matters when she's attached to that rocket at the end of her music video.
And that's the point.
Like, that's the only explicitly space-related part of that.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, why would it just be in the lobby of a planetarium?
Certainly nothing in the complex lyrics of Prickly Muffin indicate anything about space.
Right. I mean, obviously, she wants you to touch her Prickly Muffin. Not much of that has to do with space. So, I'm just saying that I would like to believe, and I will admit that I'm wrong when one of the writers comes up to me and says, Leslie, that is not the intent. We went back.
Avenetti, yo, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. If you want to, it's avenetti@twitter.com. But otherwise, I'm going to choose to believe that on this specific instance, they had intentions to revisit that when they put it in at the beginning.
And I'm willing to believe that. My only stance is that, who knows?
Who does know? That's...
Things to think about, people. Things to think about.
Okay, so BoJack and Sarah Lynn do it, and it's super gross and terrible, and BoJack is a horrible person. That is why we needed to discuss this, because we need to get into... BoJack is not a good person.
No.
This is the first in the series real indication of that. I mean, okay, so he stole some guy's muffins. But it's a trope that's been used a lot of times with the guy being angry and, oh, well, I'm gonna do this wacky off-the-wall thing. But him sleeping with Sarah Lynn is, like, the first truly, like, garbage thing that he has done in the series thus far. Because I don't think that there's any argument that it's garbage.
I mean, obviously, in the very next episode, that's when he sabotages Todd's dream project.
We'll get into that. And that's where you really start to take a step back and go, whoa, you're a terrible person. But I think that this
Yeah,
act,
he's not just a loser.
No, he's not just a loser. Worse. He's a loser of his own design. And I think that this willingness to perpetuate moral ambiguity by sleeping with the girl who is not only your TV daughter, but also the girl that you have been parenting and being a parental figure to in real life for the past 4 or 5 days or however, like, you took her to rehab once, you know, like, this is the mindset. And so while I argue that, and we'll get into this next time, and while I would argue that the next episode is the one in which we really understand that he's truly actually a bad guy, I think that this one is the one where we start to realize that he is terrible at making the right decision.
Yeah. The difference between these two quote-unquote crimes, they're moral crimes, even if they're not legal ones.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely agreed.
But the difference between these two things is that, like, he starts this sexual relationship with Sarah Lynn in this episode kind of out of proximity and convenience because, like, the temptation is literally right there, and they're both into it for a bit, so...
Because drugs or whatever, so why not?
Yeah. Whereas in the next episode, when he saboteurs Todd's dream project, he kind of goes out of his way to do that one.
Yeah, this is an impulse move. That's what I'll say about it, is that this is an impulse move, and the effort in the next episode in which we find out that he's truly terrible to sabotage Todd's chances of independence are calculated. So it's impulse versus calculation. And I think that between these two episodes, we are shown that BoJack is a terrible person when it comes to both actions.
You know, this is just kind of an interesting thing to think about. Like, obviously you and I have both watched this show to completion several times. There's nothing at this point to truly indicate this is ever going to be a redemption story.
Yeah, that's we're not it, given it, that indication, and I don't think that going into it I ever thought that.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously it's been a long time since my first time watching this, but now that I think about, like, literally this sequence of 4 episodes and 5 and 6 as well, but, like, in this sequence of episodes, yeah, there's no reason to think this is ever going to be about his recovery or healing or redemption.
No, we're not given that indication.
For all
whatsoever.
The viewer might know, this is going to be several seasons of one guy being a jerk.
Yeah, just one guy being a huge jerk, a terrible person, shitty things happening to him, shitty things happening to the people around him. And so you ask yourself, like, why did I keep watching this then? And it's just because the characters are so damn entertaining and the sight gags are so damn funny. Well,
that's just an interesting lens to look into things through. Like, again, like, this is one of the times where it actually matters how you and I watched this show.
Yeah.
Where it matters that I watched it season by season over the course of 4 years and you watched it over the course of like 3 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, it was about 3 weeks.
I exaggerate slightly, but even
no,
so.
No, it was about 3 weeks, yeah.
Like that, this is the one time where our different approaches to this show actually matter. Because from my perspective, for like over the course of a year, I would have had no reason to think this was going to be about recovery.
Sure.
And you know, so did you, but like.
Sure, but I
it's a different story when you have to wait for so long.
Yeah, and I definitely understand that.
Now we have hindsight, of course.
Yeah, which is very useful in realizing that there's a lot more to this story than is being told right now. Or than, you know, what's overtly being told right now.
Well, I think that actually might be the end of this episode, unless you have another point.
I was actually just going to say the exact same thing.
All right, well, that concludes this episode of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. I'm the Ben of that.
And I'm the Leslie.
This has been the episode Prickly Muffin. Join us again next week for Zoe's and Zelda's, which is a favorite episode of mine because I'm going to get real mad about BuzzFeed. You can find me at Ben C. Hamlin on Twitter, where I am always talking about comic books and media. You can find Leslie over at...
You can find me over at Vanetti on Twitter.com, where I'm talking about anything from tech to my first foray into Marvel movies to BoJack.
Yeah, that's right. In anticipation of Infinity War, you just knocked out like the entire first phase of the Marvel movies.
I did, and I'm going in tomorrow for phase two. See, this is how I consume media. This is how I consume it. You have to wait, and I just wait until it's pretty much all done. And then I just
I binge, I'm cool, I'm hip.
Sure.
I binged You're the Worst. I knocked that out in like 2 days. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak, where as little as $1 a month, you can support all of our projects and help us create more projects like this and improve the quality of the project you're already listening to. At $1 a month, you get behind the scenes audio from all of our podcasts, including Of Horses and Men. I put a portion up from episode 2 last week. Anyway, go check out our other projects and shows over at infinitybreak.net that includes webcomics, podcasts, videos, and more. We hope you tune in to where we are telling stories our own way. Once again, I'm Ben Hamlin.
And I'm Leslie Gates.
And we'll see you next week.
See ya.
This podcast is part of Infinity Break, where we're telling stories our own way. You can find all of our shows, podcasts, webcomics, and more at infinitybreak.net. Stay up to date with new show announcements, behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, and updates on your favorite shows. You can follow us on any social media platform by searching for Infinity Break 23. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak. Every dollar helps us improve the quality of this show and create new shows like it for your listening pleasure. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends. And as always, stay in the loop.